This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
At a time when eating healthy seems to get more and more complicated and expensive, dairy remains simple and affordable. A powerful source of micronutrients, high-quality amino acids and calcium that are all essential for healthy muscles and bones, dairy really should be enjoyed as part of a varied and balanced diet. Lovingly made with all the goodness of organic British milk, Yeo Valley Kefir is a creamy, tangy, organic yogurt packed with billions of live bacteria from 14 different culture strains for maximum gut flora diversity. Available in natural, mango and passion fruit, blueberry and strawberry flavours, the daily boost you deserve is in the yogurt aisle at all the major supermarkets. To find out more, head over to yeovalley.co.uk. Hello and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Intuitive eating makes total sense when it comes to our plates, but the philosophy behind it is just as appealing when applied to our workout plans, meaning that it's time to get on board with intuitive exercise. After all, why do we force ourselves to go to HIIT classes on days when we'd much rather be doing yoga? And why do we often lie in bed for those extra 15 minutes despite knowing that we'll miss our workout so much? So joining me to help us understand if there's a feel-good way to love every single workout is personal trainer and author Tali Rai. Hello, Tali.
Well, thank you for having me, Rhi.
Absolute pleasure. It's a very, very exciting time. I believe you've just published your first book.
I can't believe it. It's actually happened, which is crazy.
I have a copy of it here in front of me now. Train Happy, Tali Rai, an intuitive exercise plan for everybody. How exciting.
Yeah, I feel really grateful to my publishers, actually, because when they asked me what did I want to write about, I hesitated, but as soon as I actually put pen to paper and started thinking through my ideas, I knew exactly what I wanted to talk about. And for me, I feel that Train Happy is the book that's missing from the fitness space. There's no one, I think, talking about intuitive fitness to this extent in a book. But also, I feel that they let me have the drawings on the front and in the book, and we had all different models doing the workout guide and stuff like that. So I feel really grateful that they kind of let me realise my vision.
Well, it's different, isn't it? Because I think we've lost track of listening and trusting to our bodies when it comes to exercise.
Yes, and that was kind of what initially sparked the idea of the book, because it's funny, I spoke to, so my editor at the time had said to me, you know, I've been working with a personal trainer, and I said to them, I want to learn to weight train and things like this, but they've tried to put me on this path of a nutrition plan and a weight loss plan, but I asked to learn to weight train. Mm. I didn't want that. And yet I think so many of us are falling into the external rules of exercise, and therefore we're missing out that bit as to what do we want to do. And that's where the intuitive fitness element comes in, because, you know, it's all about putting it, I say it's kind of like getting the ball back in your court. What do yeah. you want to do? Getting you back in charge, rather than thinking, because I'm sure it's the same with nutrition, you know, it's overwhelming thinking I've got to be eating this 3 times a week and I need to be eating doing this, and I must be, and it's the same in fitness, you know, I have to do this certain type of exercise to do this for this benefit, and I must be meditating and doing yoga, and I need to do mobility and strength training and cardio, and it feels very overwhelming. And so we start ticking boxes as to what we've learned exercise is, rather than taking a step back and saying, okay, I appreciate all the benefits of exercise and how, you know, strength, cardio, mobility, meditation can all you know, support me, but what do I truly enjoy doing? Because I think ultimately, if we're going to do this for life, and I hope that, you know, I'm not about short-term fixes, and neither are you, you know, I really want people to stay active in a way that they enjoy for you know, as much of their life as possible.
I mean, is that what you define as intuitive exercise? Because you use the word intuitive. It's something we're hearing a lot more of.
Yeah, definitely. So I would define it, well, I define Train Happy as moving your body from a place of self-care and self-respect. And at the forefront of the decision-making behind what you're doing is doing what you enjoy and doing what feels good. And I think that's the definition.
It's a perfect thing. And I think you're right. There is a gap. It's something that isn't really thought of. Like you said, there's always an end goal. There's always something that we should be achieving perhaps too quickly and not thinking about how it makes us feel for our mind and our body. But there's so much attention put on exercise. But movement alone, it's so beneficial, isn't it, for other factors of your life?
Yes, and that was the really fun part about researching. And I had a really great conversation with the psychologist Kimberly Wilson recently. And she was talking about, you know, we call it like the brain-changing benefits of exercise. And there's actually a fantastic TED Talk, not by Kimberly, but by another person, and their name's just completely escaped me.
We can search it. What's the title of the episode?
Well, I've written about it in the book.
Perfect.
But it's called The Brain-Changing Benefits of Exercise, and it's by this neuroscientist, and she does a whole TED Talk about how fantastic exercise is at helping build a healthy and strong brain. So it can help grow your brain. It can also help with memory. It can help with focus and attention. It can help improve mood. It can help, you know, improve overall well-being. And yet it's not sexy, so we don't talk about it enough. But there are all these wonderful benefits, and it can be, you know, empowering and all these things that we're not talking about enough, and it doesn't get enough airtime, which is, you know, why I feel really grateful to get to talk about this with you today.
Oh, well, I think we're very grateful to have you on, because like you said, I think mental health is something that people don't discuss enough, and exercise, there's so many strong correlations between exercise and mental health. So anyone listening, definitely when you get to the right page in Tally's book, I would check out that TED Talk. I can't wait to watch
it's
that.
Really good. I'll send you the link.
Yes, send me the link to that. I mean, is it important to find... how important is it to find the balance between what we would define as healthy exercise? Because surely that looks different to everyone.
Yes. So I think what we can consider a positive, healthy relationship with exercise is to exercise in a way that feels good, to have that connection. A big part of the intuitive fitness as well is to have the trust and connection with your body, so that when it's saying, do you know what, I'm exhausted today, or, you know, I can feel a bit of a niggle in my body, we're not just powering through because we feel like we have to do this exercise, I have to work out X amount of times a week. It's about saying, do you know what, I think today I'd benefit from actually getting more sleep, or today I might benefit, I had planned to do a more intense workout, but I actually think the most benefit, I'm feeling stressed and anxious, and the most beneficial thing would be yoga, as an example. And it's about recognizing that within yourself and trusting yourself to acknowledge what's going on in your mind and body, but also to honor that. And I think that's the scariest part, because you know how I said about the external kind of rules around exercise,
which,
you know,
it has to everywhere be subliminally.
Yeah, but it has to be a certain length. You have to burn a certain amount of calories. You have to run a certain distance at a certain pace. And that if you're not doing those things, it's seen as a failure. Whereas I want to completely challenge that and say that's totally untrue. And actually, only you, know your body best. You know your body better than a fitness tracker. You know your body better than your trainer. You know your body best. So you can say, do you know what? Today's a go day and I'm ready. I'm going to take on a 10K and I'm going to go and smash it. But you also need to have that awareness and that trust. And I think that's such a key part of it, is the trust element, that when it's time to slow down, you slow down.
Yeah, the word trust. And I think at different points in your life as well, this would change, wouldn't it? Because different journeys, I mean, ages, if you have children or if you become sick, surely the different attitudes, trusting your body has to be so flexible.
Yeah, and it's, you're right, priorities change. Priorities change. And I even consider myself, you know, the beginning of my 20s when I was able to commit a lot, ironically, able to commit a lot more time to exercise than I am now. Mm. And I also say that, you know, at this point of my life, I'm going to train how I enjoy to train. But I also kind of have a never say never attitude. And I think, you know, I might get 10 years down the road and think, do you know what? I would love to do a marathon, or yeah, I would love to do those things. And I think it's, you're right, able to go with the flow and recognize that progress isn't always linear. We're not always on an upward trajectory of improving with exercise. That, you know, 1 year you may have had a really great year. Maybe you did a new 5K PB and you felt great and you had this really regular routine. But another year, say you were having a baby, and that year you know that the most important thing is growing that human, and that's the priority. And I think it's, you don't have to constantly be topping yourself.
No,
you can choose to kind of push and take a step back when it feels right within your life.
Yeah, it's kind of like being at peace, I guess, learning to find that place where you feel comfortable with yourself to be able to make those decisions. And exercise addiction is something that only really affects a very small percentage of the population, but it's something I think we've both seen quite a bit of, wouldn't you say?
Well, I could say I, hand on heart, I've seen it in myself. And, you know, I originally started out on my health and fitness journey by literally wanting to be healthy and fit. But the fitness and the health, the picture of health and the picture of fitness that I saw and found on social media was pretty obsessive. So I just role modeled behaviors I saw online, and I honestly just thought I was doing the best thing for me, and I was just, it was all with the best intentions, but I fell into the slippery slope of, you know, over exercising. And that gets to the point where I was prioritizing my workouts over social plans. So I would make sure that I had done things at the expense of seeing friends. I would feel extreme guilt and anxiety had I missed a session, and would always be thinking about how could I make up that in other aspects. I would, you know, have to do a certain type of exercise and train in a certain way that I deemed to be the, in quotes, right way, or the most effective way, that I thought would burn the most amount of calories. And I would sacrifice sleep and get up really early to work out. And one of the most interesting things that I have personally kind of been on my own personal journey with intuitive fitness is discovering the importance of sleep. And
oh,
I know,
goodness,
you've done podcasts on it. But when you realize that, I think we often disconnect our mind from our body. And so we're like, you know, because the exercise, so my intention of health and me approaching that health and fitness stuff was because I viewed health as fitness as getting smaller, because that's all I had been told, that's what I learned, that's just the only model of health and fitness that I saw. So I just equated it to dieting and being smaller. You know, successful fit people who were successful lost weight, and that's what I knew. And so I would prioritize, my priorities were, what could I do to best lose weight? But learning on the benefits of all these other things, and that would include, you know, sacrificing sleep and those sorts of things.
It's so rigid.
Yeah, and then learning the benefits of things like sleep and, you know, how actually exercises can be a really great factor in the things that you can do to help support your health. But a lot of our health is in some, you know, out of our control. And so actually, I was able to kind of have this realization over the last 5-6 years. And, you know, give myself a bit of a break and give myself, you know, give myself the kind of permission to just chill, step back.
It's so nice to hear
you don't have to be so I didn't have to be in such control. I was able to loosen the reins. And that's been a massive part of my journey, so that I say that fitness is now a part of my life. It is not my whole life. And I think that is a healthy relationship with exercise.
Oh, I love that. And when you said it's not my whole life, I was picturing a typical scientist, a little pie chart in my head, just thinking, which percentage of it at the moment is probably fitness? But a recent survey reported the rise of gymhibition. Could you explain what this is for us?
Well, this is a new word to me. This is a new term. But I think maybe it relates to the feeling, the intimidation of going into the gym environment. Yeah. I co-host the Fit and Fearless podcast with the Girl Gains.
Which I love. I've been a guest
yes,
on this
you
podcast.
Have. And we call, for example, the weight area in the gym, we call it the testosterone zone. And I do think that, you know, there is, particularly from a female perspective, there is intimidation going into the gym environment. And it's interesting because in the past, advice I would give, you know, would be, don't worry, everyone's too busy thinking about themselves. And actually, I think somewhat that to an extent is true. But I do think it is important to acknowledge that for some people, going into the, people do look at you when you're in the gym. I think if you're a woman, you are quite vulnerable. Sometimes it can feel scary, like, you know, people are a bit lechy. I think if you are in a bigger body, you feel so out of place because it's like, this place isn't designed for me and people are judging me for being here.
I feel like that being pregnant, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
It's the first time, because I'm quite, I guess, fortunate to be in your stereotypical slimmer body shape. Mm. It's the way my body's designed. But going in with a bump, people look at you.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you fit in.
And I think there's so, you know, there's so many instances where people, I mean, I went to a really posh gym recently and I was like, I work in a gym. I know how to use this equipment and this is terrifying. So yeah. I think it's important to be aware that, you know, for people, you know, intimidation in that gym environment is real, and to acknowledge that and to say, you know, you're not making it up. It does happen. But I think it's really about just kind of trying to shut the rest of the world out and really focusing on you and remembering why you're doing this, remembering, you know, I really believe in exercising from a place of self-care, self-respect. And if those are the foundations of what you're doing, then you just know that, you know, this makes me feel good and I want to do it. I also want to say that if the gym is an intimidating, overwhelming environment for you, you don't have to go to the gym to exercise. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways of exercising that you could do. You could do at home. You could do in the park. You could join. Yeah. I've got loads of friends doing like aerial hoops on silks. Have you seen these silks?
Oh, my goodness.
Acrobatic,
I'd love
stuff.
To do that. Not now, but later.
But you've got things like, you know, indoor rock climbing. There's swimming. You don't have to, you know, just be in a gym environment. There's so many ways to move your body. Dancing is a great one. There's so many different types of dance classes. Yeah. Ice skating. I mean, the world hopefully is your oyster. And I think we've got to think outside that gym. I'm like holding it like a Vogue box in my
head.
But I think we've got to think outside of that box. And there is a page in the book where I kind of list all the different ways I could think of, but I'm sure there are many to add to it. Where you can move your body, because, you know, as we discussed, it's so beneficial from a physical and mental perspective that, you know, it's so positive that I want more people to feel welcome and, you know, feel that they can move their body.
The word welcome really resonated with me then, because I think you're really breaking down walls when it comes to taking the fitness industry on, you know, straight away, face to face, and just being like, look, guys and girls, it's not just about this. I think it is intimidating. And this phrase, gymhibition, it is there. And like you said, just acknowledging it.
Mm.
And you're making a start and hopefully making everyone feel welcome. And I just really hope that more people fall suit, because it's tough. I mean, the fitness industry has been associated for so long with aesthetics, with weight loss. So do you think we're finally starting to see a change? Or do you think that you and your mission at the moment are just the very beginning of the movement?
Well, I would, you know, I have learned from an awful lot of other people in the fitness industry, in the nutrition space, in the almost like the fat activism space about this stuff. So I would love, you know, I'm a part of something much bigger, and, you know, I can't take credit for it at all. Intuitive fitness itself was inspired by intuitive eating, which was, you know, something that
groundbreaking,
a book by two dietitians that happened 25 years ago, Evelyn Tribble and Elise Resch. So, and even then in the 80s, it's still being spoken about. So, you know, this is all happening. I mean, this is, there's so much work going on in this space. I'm just, I just have a platform in fitness, and I really felt a calling to use it, and I really feel like I have an opportunity to say something. So
it's when social media can be positive. I think that's one of the things we did. We've done two episodes now on social media, and one of the real positives is that you're exposed to people that you wouldn't normally be exposed to, so you can choose diversity.
And that's, I feel grateful. I've really changed how I use social media. And, you know, like I said, when I first started getting into health and fitness, I just followed a very stereotypical fitness view. And at the time, it was bodybuilding was really in. That was a big trend at the time. So I just followed people who were bodybuilders, which is not the standard person, you know, in, you know, our general population. And that's a very niche sport. And yet I was viewing that as health and fitness. And that's just what it was. So I do think we're making progress from that, that we are seeing, you know, slowly but surely we're seeing more body types exercise. We're seeing different forms of exercise. I think people are catching on to that there are benefits far beyond aesthetics and weight loss. And actually, they're, you know, if we're comparing weight loss and aesthetics as two things, you know, we've got about 30 other benefits, and we need to be talking about those. But I do think we have an issue in fitness where one body type is promoted as being a fit person. And I even kind of have to catch myself as well, describing people saying, you know, oh, they've got an athletic build. We associate that with someone, you know, we associate that with,
I think, a sprinter Paralympic in the Olympics. Athlete or, yeah, Olympian. That's what I think.
Yeah, you picture six pack, you picture muscles, and you picture this, and they're an athletic build. And do you know what? Some of the fittest people I know who are stronger and fitter than me, would not be described as that. They are actually in all shapes and sizes, and yet they are also capable of things. So I really hope, and I wanted to use my book as a way, as a platform for that, and on social media as well, to use people of different ages, different body types, different backgrounds as well, to be seen as people who work out, because I really believe you have to see more to be more. And if you know, if we want more people to get active, and, you know, I think from a public health perspective, we do.
We really do.
Then we have to show that fitness can come in all shapes and sizes. And that, I mean, This Girl Can campaign is a prime example of that working. It got 3 million more people, 3 million more women moving. I think that's incredible. So I wish the rest of the fitness industry would take note, put different people on the cover of magazines, get different people, you know, working with the big fitness brands. I think people are taking steps. You know, Nike had their plus size section, and, you know, we're taking steps. They're in the right direction. We need bigger steps, but I think the tides are changing.
I love that. I can see the tides are changing. I'm almost drawing comparisons here between a phrase I use a lot called diet culture to what we can almost call as fitness culture then, I suppose. That's what you've described.
Well, I say that diet culture co-opted fitness culture. So like I said to you before, what I assumed was health and fitness was diet culture's version of fitness. And so diet culture is a kind of system of beliefs that tells us that we always have to be trying to aim to be smaller, and that makes you happier, successful, healthier, just a better moral human. And the opposite of that, in being in a bigger body, being fat, is considered to be a failure. You are lazy, greedy. Just think of all the negative connotations that we have learned about that. And so fitness kind of was like, well, we know the dieting industry is massively profitable. And so the fitness industry was like, well, I want a piece of the action. I'm going to get in on this, and I'm going to start selling, you know, 12-week transformation plans, 8-week transformation plans. I'm going to sell you my before and after picture guide, because you can get, you can do my plan and look like this. And it's attractive. And I don't blame anyone. No one is at fault for buying into that and thinking, do you know what, I'm going to do this, because, you know, I have been there. You know, so many people have been there. It is no one's fault.
No judgment on this podcast for doing that.
But I think, and I hope, and I talk extensively about diet culture in the book, just saying that, you know, it's not anyone's fault, but be aware of this stuff, because diet culture doesn't have your best interests at heart. It wants to make money off of your insecurities.
And I almost wonder if this is going to be a generation shift. So often we see in literature or in science that as each different demographic goes on, so let's say people at the moment under the age of 40 perhaps are aware of this topic, but perhaps 40 plus are not. We don't have data for stats on that. So maybe in the next, dare I say, I mean, I hate to say it so far away, but maybe 10, 20, 30 years, the way the future generations view exercise and view diet culture is definitely going to shift.
I do think people are more aware of it. I became aware of it through kind of more exposure to like I said, the fat activism and feminism. I became aware of it through that lens. And as a woman, I realised that diet culture was stealing a lot of my time. I spent a lot more time, you know, particularly as a woman, than my male counterparts, you know, worrying about what I was eating, worrying about what I was doing in the gym, just generally about my appearance, because I was trying to conform to this beauty standard, this body standard that I don't naturally fit, and I had to work extremely
hard
to fit.
Let's be fair, lots of people do not fit.
And I had to, you know, and I kind of, on reflection, I've realised the work, the time, the energy, the brain space I put into achieving that means that that is not sustainable for me. That is not where I'm naturally meant to be. And what could I do with all that other time and energy? What can I do with that headspace? I could write a book. Like, yeah. I'm not being, if you asked me 5 years ago to write a book, I would not have had the time, the headspace. I was too busy, you know, tracking my food and making sure I worked out. I really didn't have the time. And I talk about this in the book as well and just say that, you know, I've become more politically aware, you know, socially engaged. I read way more. I have more time for my friends. I have so much more of a well-rounded version of life because I'm not giving so much time to making myself smaller. And that burden of making myself smaller has been lifted. And it is so freeing. And I really want people to, and I know so many people have experienced exercise through the lens of, you know, making myself smaller, it's punishment, it's to...
I would almost say the majority of people fall into exercise with
well,
with
I call it
lens.
The earn and burn mentality, that I'm doing this to earn my food and to feel less guilty about eating.
Which is still, unfortunately, a message you see posted around fitness centres.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, eat to burn. No, burn to eat.
Yeah. Or do this to earn your...
Not right.
Your whatever kind of
especially
holiday it
January,
is.
Especially January, because if we discuss the fact that January is here and everybody is jumping on...
Let's burn off Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, sharing this message now about body confidence could not be more important to empower other people to feel like you feel liberated. And it is possible.
I really hope 2020 is the year that of self-acceptance for so many. Body acceptance is a part of that, but I really think a huge part of it comes from self-acceptance and figuring out who you are besides your body. Like, who are you outside of this shell? Because I believe that your body is just a shell, and inside is you, and that is the true you, and that is the person that your friends love and your family love, and
soul almost.
And that person inside has so much to give and has so many talents that are suppressed and held back because we're too, you know, we're too stuck on the shell. And so I really hope that 2020 is the year of kind of that self-acceptance and figuring out who you are, what, you know, how can you use your voice, and through that you start to build self-worth and realize that, you know what, I'm worth taking care of, and what helps me take care of myself, maybe it is doing yoga once a week to, you know, de-stress from a busy working week. Maybe it is making time for, you know, a 30-minute morning workout so that I can be more focused throughout the day, and that's going to help me be better at my job and just a better you know, partner and friend. And so I think it's coming at it from that perspective, and so that's the shift. The shift is a psychological shift. It is, and it's deeper work. Mm. It is deeper work. It's not so simple as, you know,
switching a switch on.
Oh,
and be
I'm
like,
gonna do this. Yeah. And that's why it's not as sexy and glamorous as doing like, oh, you know, an 8-week plan where I can get. I'm apparently meant to get this after result, and I think it takes time. And so for intuitive fitness, I say to some people, this might, you might read this book. I think this book might be a catalyst for people to explore this in depth, because there's so much more literature out there. I really, you know, there's a resource list at the back. I really recommend delving into it.
Yeah, and lots of it can be free as well. I think it's so important to state the fact that working on yourself, and it's something we discuss a lot in the Retrition Clinic, is the hardest thing you will ever do in your life. It will not happen overnight. Nope. And you may be here now, but it won't be until next year or 5 years' time that it actually clicks.
Yep, a light bubble graph and you're like, ha. I mean, this journey for me on a personal level has been the last, I mean, I really started getting into that fitness, that kind of obsessive phase of my life was almost 7 years ago now. And, you know, it's been a slow transition. I didn't have this book. I didn't have this framework. There is a framework for cultivating the intuition around fitness. I talked through like 9 kind of points of kind of guiding points that help you kind of reevaluate your relationship with exercise. And I didn't have that. But when I did discover it through intuitive eating and seeing in there, so there's a principle of intuitive eating called joyful movement.
I love that. I think it's a nice way of...
And that kind of like was the missing piece of the puzzle for me. So I hope that this might give people, a stepping stone towards that, because I wish I had it. I wish I was exposed to it earlier.
I know. And do you think, I mean, on that note, so food and fitness are very closely intertwined, just as much as psychology and food and psychology and fitness. It's all part of the bigger pie that we discussed at the beginning, your pie. Do you think everybody should be alongside intuitive fitness, practicing intuitive eating, or is it more of an individual?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I personally really believe in intuitive eating. I think, we're born intuitive eaters, but we just get so confused along the way. And we get so confused and conflicted. And my goodness, it's overwhelming when you start to really look at nutrition information. You can think, oh, I'm doing everything wrong, and it feels so scary. And it's the same with fitness as well. And I do believe that, we're born as babies to cry when we're hungry and to, turn our heads when we're full. And, we know what we like, we know what we dislike. And that a lot of that gets lost. I do believe that we can all be intuitive eaters. And I've given a section to intuitive eating in the book through the help of a dietitian, because I think, and I should say this now, and I know Ree, we've spoken about this many a time before.
Yep.
As a personal trainer, it is not my place to have, to give, in-depth nutrition advice. I want to point people in the direction of great resources, such as this podcast, two books, two articles, two things like that, and support in a way I can, but it is not my job to give meal plans. It's not my job to tell people what to eat.
And I think a lot of people go to personal trainers and that's the first thing they get in front of them.
They assume, I think personal trainers feel like we have to have all the answers, and that if we don't have all the answers, then people will leave. It's a business thing. People are scared to lose clients, to lose money. So we'll say yes, and we can do that, we can do that, we can do that. When actually I think there's so much I think we all do better when we say, do you know, this is what I'm really good at. I'm great at training. So I'm going to train you and I'm going to talk to a nutritionist and refer you to a nutritionist who really, you know, has done that studying. And I'm going to work with them to make sure you have the best care. I think that's really powerful. If you're a personal trainer, you get cross referrals. It's a win-win situation. Everyone wins. Yeah,
it's like a business transaction. If you're looking at it, I think a lot of people often say you have to be able to let things go in order to welcome more in. And it is a scary thing for anyone. This is totally off the topic of what we've been discussing. But if anyone out there has a business model and you're worried about losing clients or your business, actually, the more you open up your heart to help people, I know this sounds so cheesy, but the more you help, the more will come back.
And the more and the better team you build.
Yeah.
You know, I have, you know, someone I can refer to if I think a client needs counselling or therapy, a nutritionist, a physiotherapist, an osteopath, all
you
those
build
things.
Build a network.
You build that network. And I think that's really important so that that person gets the full care that they deserve. But back to our original point, which I can't remember what it was.
Which was discussing intuitive eating.
So, with my clients, I will suggest intuitive eating as an option. I believe everyone has autonomy, so you can choose to do whatever you want with your body and how you eat. But I see it really healing people, and I see it really helping people get to that stage of peace with food and peace with their bodies and peace with exercise. And I just really want that for people.
Happiness.
So, yeah, I just want people to not feel so stress and guilt and shame around food and exercise. I really believe there's no place for shame and guilt in fitness in particular and with food. Evelyn Tripley, who wrote Intuitive Eating, always says, unless you stole the food, you have nothing to feel guilty about. You have full permission to eat everything. And with that comes, intuitive eating, I'm sure you've done the podcast. It's a whole other thing on it.
It's a heavily debated topic, but I think one that has to be out there.
Well, I think the misconception is, and interestingly, I've spoken to a few people about the concept of intuitive fitness now. And the thing is, well, Tally, do you think people will just give up? Do you think if you tell people that, you know, they can exercise however they want, as much or as little as they want, then they won't do anything? If I tell people they can eat all the foods, will they then just only eat chocolate, as an example?
Anyway, I'll let you answer.
Well,
that.
I think so. In that case, I think for some people who have so strongly associated exercise with punishment, restriction, and guilt and shame, there may be a reset where they have to do nothing in order to do the recalibration. They're recalibrating. So you swing from one extreme, the all section, to the nothing section, to come back to the sweet spot that works for you. And so I do think there may be a time when people are like, well, hang on a minute, I actually hate everything I'm doing. I don't like burpees. I don't like, you know, intense classes. Yeah. Or I don't like running. I'm going to, and like, so I don't know what to do. What, I don't know how I feel. I've got no motivation. That's the big thing. I've got no motivation. Yeah. And so I really talk about finding intrinsic motivation. For so long, diet culture gave us extrinsic ways to motivate ourselves. You know, get the body for your holiday, get the dream life. When you reach that goal's dress size, you will live the dream life.
The amount of people that messaged me, have you been on a diet before your wedding? Obviously, they didn't know I was pregnant at the time. So obviously, I wasn't even on any kind of diet. But it's unbelievable people think that's one of the biggest goals.
That's a huge pressure. And that is a huge pressure for people. So when you have those extrinsic factors, you know, you struggle with motivation to sustain it on a really long-term basis. When you find what actually makes you tick and you are like, hang on a minute, and you recalibrate, and in that period of nothingness, it might be a case of, you know, finding yourself and realizing, what do I like? What do I enjoy? Who am I?
And what's going to help me?
What makes me feel good? And then you start doing the things that make you feel good. So, for example, my recalibration went from training in that kind of bodybuilding way to really switching to kind of doing a lot less weight training and figuring out, like, well, what do I actually like doing? What do I want to do? And I started doing swimming lessons. And that was something, and I'm really loving it. And I'm doing other things that I didn't consider that they, quote, counted because they didn't burn enough calories or I didn't sweat enough. That's such a misconception.
I know. I discussed that with Alice Living on a recent episode. It was one of the biggest things I used to think, because I've never been a I need to go and sweat type of girl. So I would have this internal guilt. Oh, I haven't sweat enough. I would just do a bit of cross trainer or just something that I fancied.
But I think...
Such a misconception.
But it's also because all bodies sweat differently anyway.
Yes.
Just from knowing from personal training clients, I've got someone who will do the first lunge and the warm-up and will be profusely sweating. So yep. People who I have to, you know, do quite high intense conditioning with them to get a bead of sweat. So we all sweat mm-hmm. differently anyway. So I think that's just a whole myth, and I'm glad you guys busted it.
Honestly, it just goes to show. And I think, so what are some of the best ways that anybody out there can kind of unwind after working out and busy weeks? Is there something that you would say people could make, like adjustments to their surroundings or their mindset to help them switch off a bit more?
Well, I think getting out in nature's great. Mm. I know I live in the middle of London, and so that is a bit of a luxury, but getting to green space when possible, getting outside, getting that actual perspective of, you know, when you're in a you can see lots of scenery and you just feel so small. And I think that really helps give me perspective on a personal level. And I know there is science to back it up as well.
I love the way of it. I think the science came from, it was Rangan Chatterjee I spoke to in my first series. And he said they're called fractiles, which yes. are, you know, images of nature that have an effect on your parasympathetic nervous system. And interestingly, from looking from a maternal kind of pregnancy aspect, it's apparently very, very good to put elements of nature in a room when you give birth. So,
well, I think that's what people yeah. crave being by the ocean, crave being, in green spaces. And so I think because that really calms people, and it really does. I also think, and something I need to get better at, is doing, you know, more kind of yoga practices and more slow stuff. I really enjoy, you know, like a yin yoga at the end of the week where yin yoga is when you hold certain, quite not too difficult poses at all. They're all about relaxing into the joints and really doing relaxing positions. I mean, I'm not a yoga expert, don't claim to be, have a yoga expert in the book. but you kind of let your body kind of sink into those positions. And I think, that's really important to switch off. And I think for some people, de-stressing is doing something more intense, but yoga is so beneficial for the gut, for so many things that affect our mental health as well, that yeah. you know, doing something where you slow down and connect with your body, because the great thing about things like yoga is it's so mindful, and you have to trust your body and connect with your body, which is obviously the foundation.
Well, think about it, we fitness. Spend most of our days sitting down at desks or running around like a crazy thing. Do we ever actually lie on our back in the middle of the day, stretch, or put your head beneath your legs or something, you know, just the blood
like child's
flow
pose,
child's
just,
pose
yeah.
even these teeny little movements. But I could talk about this forever. We have questions from followers for you today, Tally. So Sophie has said, I'm considering getting an exercise tracking device, but they're quite expensive. Would you say it's worth it?
I would say the best fitness tracking device is the one in your body.
I love that.
The one that knows you best is you. Now, I'm not going to completely write off fitness trackers and say they're evil. I don't think they're inherently bad, but I think our relationships with them can be quite disordered, and we become too reliant on them. And I talk about it in this book. I believe they're a barrier to intuitive fitness because they take us away from trusting ourselves. So I've taught classes, done sessions where people are adjusting them mid workout, so they're not even fully present in their body whilst they're moving their body. I also think the way, you know, our activity levels change day to day.
Yeah.
How can a fitness tracker set you one goal, a fixed goal, every single day, bearing in mind that from Monday to Sunday, you may do stuff that's completely different? And I think, and we feel guilty when we don't meet that certain step goal, that certain, we don't complete our rings or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think if you feel like it's making you feel guilty or anxious about exercise, and it's making you feel pressured to do things, and you're doing things that you don't want to do, but you're doing them to complete your rings or do your activity day, that's a point when you need to take it off. Now, I think a healthy relationship with activity tracker is being able to take it off, leave it, and not worry about it. But if you find that you feel stressed when you don't wear it and you have to wear it, you know, 24/7, then it's worth considering and reflecting on your relationship with fitness trackers.
Excellent answer. And for anyone that saw, I did a myth-busting post on 10,000 steps a day at some point, if you just use the hashtag mythbusting with Ree. And actually, it's just a number that's been plucked. There's no research to back it up. And I just think when we become very number orientated, it can be a bit stressful. But of course, I also have clients that can be beneficial. Like Tally said, just leave it and it will be fine. Finn has said, I'm intrigued by intuitive fitness. How can I get started?
Well, I'm going to suggest getting the book.
Yes, I think that's probably a good place. Like the only book out there to start you off on it, really.
But the first question I would ask yourself, if exercise had no effect on your aesthetics, on your weight, what would you do? And how would you move? And why would you move? And I think ask yourself those questions, and that's a really, really good place to start.
Great. And this kind of leads on to what Mary's asked. She said, recently I've been exercising daily, but I'm not seeing any results. Could it be that I'm doing it wrong?
Well, it depends what kind of results you're after. Generally, like we said, we've discussed the strong associations to fitness with aesthetics and weight change, and we use those as markers of success. However, I think there are far better ways to track your progress, and I would strongly suggest if you're doing any sort of weight training, or maybe you're running or something where you feel like you can use a measurement, a unit of measurement. So for example, when I'm training clients, we're predominantly doing more resistance-based training, weight-based training. So we look to increase the amount we've lifted, or we look to see, can we, you know, we've reached a certain amount, but can we increase the number of reps, or can I improve my time of my 5k? Can I run a mile a bit faster, or can I hold a plank for longer, for example? And I talk through a basic little fitness test you can use, and I think we need to think about measuring our fitness that way, because some people may start exercising, their body might change. Some people won't. Some people's, you know, there's no guarantee. I think what we need to do is look at other measurements of progression and improvement. So I would really recommend, if looking at pictures of yourself isn't working for you, start thinking about, you know, do I feel actually I'm stronger at this, or I feel like I can, you know, like I said, hold a plank for longer, or I can do a press up. They're incredible. They're the achievements we should be celebrating.
Your goals.
They're the brilliant things you should be doing. And I really strongly encourage you to build on that. Build on those little, I say the little wins. Build on the little wins, because they keep you going.
I love little wins. I think in life they do become the thing you kind of live for, the little ones every day. And Kat has said, and this really actually quite was a question when it came in that I just thought, oh goodness, it's perfect for Tally. I'm overweight and not confident, and I want to start going to the gym. Do you have any advice on what exercise might be best for me to start off with, and how to help build up my confidence? And I really kind of felt for Kat when she wrote in with this, because it's something that I'm sure you get a lot.
Yeah, I think, like we spoke about the gym intimidation aspect, I think people are terrified of going in the fitness environment thinking, I don't have a clue what to do, and I feel like everyone's looking at me. And so perhaps it's a case of starting small, starting at home, starting really simply, and maybe just trying to go for a walk or two, and building up from there, investing in a few little bits of home equipment. Maybe in the book I've got body weight home workouts for people to do, as well as using dumbbells and kettlebells, all that stuff which can be done at home. There is some investment in the dumbbells and kettlebells, but you could do all of it at home in theory. There are also classes you can do. Are there groups which you could join that you think could be really supportive, such as a really nice running club in your area, or maybe there's a dance class that
or
you might like to join?
A friend you can grab to go with you.
A friend would be really important. Someone to go with you to help you feel more comfortable. I do think that as a trainer, I only ever want people to come and succeed. I only ever want the best from people. And so I think finding the right places for you, there are fitness environments where it is intimidating and maybe it is a bit judgy. So I think you have to look out for them, but maybe start small, start at home and then go from there.
That's lovely advice. And I think, Kat, just to reiterate, you're not actually as alone as you may think. People you least expect get intimidated by these situations. Anecdotally, I don't really go by myself to fitness classes, never have done, have always struggled, or that even I, you know, I get intimidated, and you may not, you know, I may come across as confident, but I always like to go with a friend. So remember, you're definitely not alone. We do now have the fact or fiction round of the podcast, Tally. So are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
Right, so fact or fiction to the following questions. We should be doing at least 4 different types of exercise as part of our routine.
So there's can I caveat it?
Yeah,
so,
go.
So I completely appreciate the benefits of all different types of movement. And I presume that's kind of a cardio, a strength, a mobility and a yoga type thing, or a flexibility thing. Now, there's definitely place for all of that. But I think for someone who is kind of repairing their relationship with exercise and going through that process of building intuitive fitness, don't stress about that. Just start working on doing the things that you enjoy. And then as you get more confident and stronger in that trust with yourself, start adding in that, start thinking like, right, I know that I like running and I know that weight training will help me get less injuries. So that will keep me running and keep my body stronger for longer. So how can I incorporate that? Don't get too hung up on ticking those boxes. Just do what you like, and then once you get that going, start thinking about, okay, now I need to do a bit of this. And so yeah, leave that till the end.
Less box ticking. There is no structure to intuitive exercise.
Oh, well,
it's very difficult.
Could be true, could be false, because no, there can be no structure in the sense that you could go and do whatever you wanted, and that's totally okay, and that's intuitive fitness. But people who, if you're training for something such as you run, you want to do a 10K, a marathon, you're going to have to follow some structure. And so linked to the previous one, it's about knowing you're at a point when adding structure isn't going to stop you trusting yourself, and also allowing for flexibility within that structure. So not, you know, rigidly sticking to, you know, I have to do this. It's very much going with, you know, okay, this is what I need to do this week, but you know, on Tuesday it said I needed to do I don't know, like a long run, but actually I'm exhausted, so I'm going to make sure that I'm good and I'll try and do it on the weekend.
Perfect.
And it's, you know, having that flexibility in there.
Love that. 42% of women in the UK are not active enough for good health.
Well, I'm not going to argue with the stats,
probably,
but I wouldn't be surprised if that is true, because I do feel that a lot of people feel alienated from exercise, and they don't feel, like we said, they don't feel welcome. They don't feel included in the exercise space. And so many people are getting neglected. I think a lot of fitness, particularly in London, is preaching to people who are already fit, they're already well, and the people that truly need it are outside of here. They're in poorer communities, and we need to create, we need to work out a way how we can get into those poorer communities who don't want to pay gym memberships, who don't have the time, the money, don't have the resources. You know, how can we encourage being more active day to day? And I think we need to be stop being quite so short-sighted at, you know, like, if you can already afford a gym membership and you're able to do those things, like, that's incredible. You're already one step ahead.
You're winning, yeah.
And that's, and like, it's not, it feels almost like unfair that people who are in those more disadvantaged communities are missing out, and it's not fair. Yeah. It isn't fair. And so, you know, it's up to...
Another government-related thing there that we could do a whole other podcast episode on, yeah. Public health.
I do think the fitness industry, I do think we can. There are some amazing things. I spoke about this charity before. There's something called the Billy Project that work with teenagers and in, you know, poorer communities, and getting people to, you know, get the opportunity to weightlift for the first time, or, you know, working with people that way. I think there are people out there doing great things, and I think
we need to open our eyes to,
yeah,
it.
We do. And, you know, I, as a person, you know, I need to get involved more. I think we can all get involved more in reaching more people.
Agreed. Intuitive eating is another diet.
Intuitive eating is another diet if you tell yourself that weight loss has to be the result. So if you approach it and say that, right, I'm going to do this to lose weight, it is a diet. That's the diet mentality. However, if you do this saying, I want to make peace with my body and food, and I want to be free of all this pressure, then you're on the path to intuitive eating. And so many of us it's so common to get caught to... Intuitive eating's attractive because you're like, oh, so I can eat what I want, and I eat when I'm hungry, I stop when I'm full, and it becomes like, oh, I can intuitively eat the least amount possible, rather than
it can get very
eating.
Complex.
Do you know what I mean? It's very complex, and I've done my fair stuff in intuitive, like I said, I'm a personal trainer, but I do think that, yeah, it depends the way
how you approach it.
Yeah,
there we go. An intuitive approach to life will mean you'll lose weight.
False. An intuitive approach to life means that you don't worry about your weight anymore, and that is an arbitrary number that does not define you. And actually, we can live a full and happy life in all different body shapes and sizes.
Totally agree. 57% of 18 to 24 year olds admit to having felt anxious because of their body image.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. I feel like social media exacerbates that issue in the sense that, you know, we're bombarded with imagery. Non-stop. 100%. And even though you've got things like the body positive community really showing people different, you know, people really who are at ease and accepting themselves, and particularly in bigger bodies. I think there's still that face tune stuff going on, and it's hard.
There is. The body confidence movement in the UK is improving.
I do think it's getting more traction. I do think we are seeing a bit of a pushback thanks to people like Body Posy Panda, Jameela Jamil. I think people are, you know, realising that they, you know, there's more to them than what they look like.
Love that. Following Instagram workouts by influencers are effective.
Depends on the workout, depends on the influencer, depends so on what you could deem to be effective. 100%. I think there's some really great people. I'd put like Alice Living in that bracket, who puts out really well thought out content. She is a great
advocate for a great advocate, healthy relationship with exercise.
But also she really knows her stuff.
Yeah.
So there's some great people. To. Yeah.
25% of women avoid the gym to prevent them from being judged.
What, like we spoke about it earlier, and I do think that sadly is true. But I do think okay, maybe the gym's not for you. Let's try something else.
Agreed. Tally, excellent fact or fiction round. So informative. That does nearly wrap up the podcast. But as with every guest, we finish with our food for thought. So I think mine today would definitely be encompassing everything that we've discussed. Aim to do something you enjoy, the combination of exercises, because there are so many things out there that have countless benefits to health. And obviously, I can only speak from a nutritionist point of view. I do not consider myself to be a fitness expert, but we know exercise does improve digestion. We're looking at blood flow around the body. We know that it benefits so many different areas when it comes to cognition, when it comes to absorption of different nutrients in the body. But it's so much more than a weight management tool. And often I get people coming into my clinic saying, oh, you know, I'm smashing the gym, I'm doing this, I'm not reaching my goal. Whereas actually a lot of the time, the reason they're not is because they're looking at it in the wrong way. Like Tally said in the fact or fiction round, the approach to what you do is extremely important. And, you know, I find it difficult to find time for exercise. I've now made it part of my routine. It was extremely difficult throughout my pregnancy, different stages. I'm only 5.5 months as we're recording. But if you find something you enjoy, guys, I think that really is the best way to make it fit into your lifestyle. And you'll have a much better chance of keeping it up and reaping the rewards. But Tally, I think everyone would love to hear from you a take home message or one thing that you feel would really benefit our listeners. I mean, what would that be?
I think this January, don't dive headfirst in, take it slowly at your pace. And like I said, really explore what you enjoy and ask yourself that question I kind of said earlier. What would you do if it didn't have an effect on your weight or aesthetics? What would you like to do? And try that.
That is the ultimate question. I think it's the best question because I hope all of you listening now are thinking in your head, oh, what do I actually like to do? It is the best question. Tally Rye, thank you so, so much for coming on. Your book is now on the shop shelves.
Yes, it is available everywhere. Well, from the 9th of January, it is available everywhere, I presume. Yeah. All good bookstores. Yep. You can find it on there.
And if you would like to hear any more on intuitive fitness, head over to Tally Rye's social media platforms as well. And thank you, Tally, for coming on Food for Thought.
Thank you so much. It's been great.
If you enjoyed this episode, you will absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get our podcast out there, to reach those higher highs in the charts and to help more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.